Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
A fired SEC head coach always makes for a huge story. There is one giant detail missing this time. Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday, and I hope everybody is just having a wonderful day today. Wherever it is you are and wherever, whenever you're listening, it could be live. You're eating lunch. It could be later in the day. It's dinner time. Could be that fella at the front desk at the check-in at the World Golf Village in St. Augustine. Listen to me every night in Jacksonville. I think it's about 11 p.m. So whenever it is, thank you for tuning in. Maybe it's on the podcast or the app. That's great, too. I said a fired SEC head coach always makes for a huge story, and I mean that. The Vanderbilt job's open. It's not. Clark Lee is there, and they've already cashed the ticket. I told you, September, and you can already cash the ticket for Vanderbilt. So, bully for them. But, no, it doesn't matter who the SEC head coach was. If he's fired, it's news. Sometimes it's because of who the coach was, but it's always because of what conference the job is in. If it's Florida, okay, that's bigger than Vanderbilt or Missouri, but Vanderbilt or Missouri still has my attention. I mean, ooh, all right, who are they going to go at? Like, what are we trying to do? That's what I want to know as much as anything from a program that is less achieved. All right, are you trying to change something? So, anytime there is, whether it's the fired coach or the potential opening, something's going to tell you this is important to us. If you like college football, if you follow it, SEC, it matters. It is the sun. Everything rotates around it. It's just what it is. And the detail missing from this fired SEC head coach story is why. If you haven't heard, I'm going to give you a quote. Auburn head coach Brian Harsin has already been told he's done after this year. A.J. McCarron, former Bama quarterback, you all know who he is, former NFL quarterback. A.J. McCarron, and I said this is a quote, Auburn head coach Brian Harsin has already been told he's done after this year. McCarron said that on the Ringer podcast, Slow News Day. McCarron said Harsin was allegedly informed, according to McCarron's sources. Harsin was allegedly informed that he's done after this year. You're going to be fired. He was already told that September 17th. Auburn was at home that day. Kind of stood in the middle of the ring and swung with Penn State for about two quarters or quarter and a half. Not much into the second half at all. And Penn State put a number up, beat them by four touchdowns. And according to A.J. McCarron, he says Brian Harsin was informed on September 17th, following the home beat down to Penn State, you're already fired. We're going to announce it later. Now, me asking why? Not why is Harsin being fired, because if that happens, it's because, I don't know, Georgia puts half a hundred on him next Saturday. I don't know, LSU does it this Saturday. Dan, can LSU do it this Saturday? Are they, oh, Dan, thumbs up. Dan, wear it, man. I swear, I love fandom. I love chest out. Dan doesn't know that. Dan's like, yeah, we put 50 on him. Maybe they can. But when I say there's a detail missing, Why would they fire Harsin? I'm not asking why would they fire Harsin, because that's not what A.J. McCarron said. Me asking why is because McCarron said Harsin has already been told he's fired at the end of the season. And even if that's the case, even if that's what the Auburn administration has decided, that's my question. Why? Why would you do what A.J. McCarron said, which is tell your head coach on September 17th, we're going to fire you 2.5 months from now? Not why would you fire him. Why would you tell him? Hey, Brian, could we talk to you? Sure. Yeah, I know if you look down on your Casio, it's only September 17th, but yeah, 2.5 months from now, we all talked over here, us. Yeah, we talked, and we decided that on September 17th, yeah, we're going to fire you 2.5 months from now. Week of the Iron Bowl, week after the Iron Bowl, matters little. But we've already decided you're fired, and we're telling you now in the middle of September. But go ahead and do the work that it takes to be an SEC head coach for the next 10 weeks. And then we're going to announce we're going to fire you. So why? What would be the motivation for that? What would be the possible outcome to benefit Auburn? What, Auburn's good folks, they want to do Harsin a solid. Are you out of your mind? Are the people at Auburn good folks? Absolutely. Would they love to do Harsin a solid? Yes, they'll recommend a great mover. Not do him a solid to the point that an SEC program, and I mean one with a resume like Auburn, they would do Brian Harsin, hey, look, brother, you put in some time. Obvious to everybody it's not going to work out, so tell you what we're going to do. I know it's only September 17th, but 2.5 months from now, like week of Thanksgiving, we're going to fire you then. We've already decided it's going to happen. But we're going to hold off. We're going to let you and all these assistants, you know, not the ones that we forced upon you, like Bobo and Derek Mason, like your boys from Boise, like all the guys that you've hung with for years and years. Yeah, we're going to let y'all do all the work for the next 2.5 months, and then we're going to can every one of you. So the detail that I haven't found yet is why. Have the powers that be at Auburn already decided to fire Harsin? Maybe. And I will repeat, if that's what the case is, if it's yes, we have already decided, I can see the reasoning. It's not a good product. A.J. McCarron said the Auburn administration has told Brian Harsin he was fired. And the truth is, that is the opposite of what you would do. You would say, keep at it, man. A little more effort. We're about to break through. We got your back. Then you would go back into the room and everybody would know what's what. I'm all ears. I'm wondering what the motivation would be, what the possible outcome would be. Now, as far as waiting, again, I understand that. There are declining balances. And I don't know about Brian Harsin's contract, but I know like Georgia Tech, they wanted Jeff Collins gone so bad that they fired him right now. Could have waited. And Georgia Tech's season is underwater. They have one win. They might finish with 2 or 3. But Georgia Tech, they could have. And if you already know it's going to be a bad product regardless of what we do, well, let's just go ahead and wait 2 months and we'll save ourselves a couple of million dollars. And Texas is like, no, it's gone past that. We don't have that option anymore. Nebraska and Scott Frost. Nebraska and Scott Frost. They looked at him and said, we can wait just a little while. Like till October 1st. Do you realize we would be on the cusp of being able to fire Scott Frost and save like $7.5 million? All they had to do at Nebraska, where he played and led them to championships, all they had to do was put up with Scott Frost. For what? Another 2 weeks? And they're like, no. Sometimes it's so bad that you have to move on now. That's not what's going on at Auburn. That's not the story. It's not the report. Now, I would believe that much more than they've already told him, but they're not doing it. If the story is, now here's a scenario. Auburn plays LSU on Saturday. Now, it's a home game, and here's the interesting part about that. It's a night game at Auburn, and I can't decide right now whether it would be better to be on the road or be at home. And the commentary is, because everybody knows, I mean, I'm transparent. I'm an Auburn grad alum. I'm a fan. I want them to go 15-0 every year, and if they play your team, I have ill will for you that day for 3 hours. Otherwise, I don't care. Everybody's the same to me. But I realize this is a commentary. This is the one program I can talk about this way. It's a commentary on what I'm thinking about the team because I can't decide if I would rather have that game at home or on the road. Because if you do lose to LSU, for instance, I'm going to pick a number 31-10. That could happen. Absolutely could happen. If you lose to LSU 31-10, was it a little better it took place on the road? Because if you're at home, it's LSU. That visitor side corner and down near the band, folks, that's going to be purple and gold. That's just what it is. And I think that there will be some other tickets available for purple and gold if they would like that. But it's going to be over, it'll be 85,000 Auburn fans there. All right, 80,000 Auburn fans, bunch of students, everybody, because it's LSU and you bought the tickets and, well, we're going anyway, so we'll drive over from Columbus. 31-10, and you start looking around thinking it's a, because it's a 6 p.m. Central kick. All right, so you live over, I said Columbus. You know, Columbus is like 45 minutes from Auburn. Let's be a little more realistic here. You live in Pascagoula, Mississippi. So now you got to get over to like Mobile-ish and then all the way up 65 and through Montgomery. And okay, so now it's a day. And so for a 6 p.m. kickoff, we're going to leave about 11 a.m. because we want some real good tailgating time. 11 a.m. And now you're looking down at your watch and it's about 8:30 and it's the middle of the third quarter and you're thinking, I may just want to get in the Vista Cruiser and head home now because they've wasted enough of my. See, that's the thing with it being at home. Isn't that a heck of an unintentional commentary? I can't tell because I'm expecting LSU to win, and it might be a little less damaging if it were on the road. Georgia, my gosh, put that. You think I want to see that in person if I'm an Auburn fan? The Georgia thing's in Athens next week. And then it's Oxford, and then it's off. There is a real good chance that LSU, Georgia, and Ole Miss, that'll determine what happens with Brian Harsin if it hasn't been determined already. But whenever it is decided, I think at that same time, they will tell Brian Harsin.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
There's always a chance for something valuable. And I had said last week for LSU, and swapping a different major program, playing a beatable opponent, that whether it's Southern or New Mexico, you know, I don't know how much you're going to find out about yourself. I'm talking like big picture, because LSU is the biggest of big pictures. They're a national championship program. They ain't there right now, but they're a national championship program. So I don't know how you're going to measure yourself against Southern and New Mexico. But what I do like always is it's a chance for some kids to get some run. And, I mean, literally in this case with the running backs against New Mexico last week, I just like kids who have either been an eligibility thing or an injury thing or a depth chart thing. Finally, you get some run, and you get to find out at least an indicator when we get back into conference what it may be like. The offensive line, I have some questions about that, but they've got a large human that is about to step into the starting lineup as well on the offensive line. They got Anthony Bradford, I believe he's going to start, I think, because they had another injury there. But the offensive line is the question, and I said that is the matchup. It's the one thing, even sketchy quarterback, I can coach around Jarrett Lee. Andrew Hatch, No disrespect there. I can coach around that. LSU did. Offensive line, I can't do anything for you. I really can't. Auburn's pretty good up front. So there is the reason that a LSU roster way, way better than Auburn, I believe. It's still going to be a ball game. I want to welcome on right now. Good friend of mine, 104.5 out yonder in Baton Rouge. It is Matt Moscona. How are you, brother?
Chuck, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm blessed. My alma mater's taking on a better team, but they're at home, and there might be an opportunity for Auburn's defensive front against the LSU offensive line. That's what I opine. What is your opinion about that matchup? Because that's all I got for an Auburn fan listening.
I agree, but Chuck, I'm going to tell you, man, I don't think it matters, and here's why. I don't think LSU's offensive line at any point this year is going to be a dominant group. They've got really good young players. They got guys, Chuck, that are Sunday guys. They're just young. Will Campbell, Emory Jones, they're going to be Sunday guys. But they're true freshmen starting at tackle.
Yep.
And then they're the best option that LSU has right now, make no mistake. But LSU, I don't think, is going to be an offensive line that's able to grind out an opponent's defensive front and run the ball. LSU's running game is largely going to be predicated upon Jaden Daniels making plays with his feet, which he's been able to do. And I think that's going to be the case again tomorrow, man. I think before Florida State, I told you I thought Daniels would be LSU's leading rusher and said the same thing against Mississippi State. I'm going to tell you the same thing for tomorrow. It's when the plays break down, his ability to run is dynamic, and that's how LSU is going to move the ball on the ground. Look, against you referenced Mississippi State, Chuck. The drive they put together right before half to get on the board to make it 13-7. After three consecutive first downs, Daniels ran on second down, three consecutive sets of downs, and ran for double-digit yards, kept moving the sticks. If you try to give numbers on the back to defend against LSU's receivers, Daniels is going to make you pay with his feet. It's just how it's going to go for this team.
Now, let me actually – maybe you correct me. I mean, Garrett Dellinger, he's got a broken bone. Are they just going to club it up, or is he – he's not playing, right?
He is likely going to be out. So he had surgery on Tuesday, and he is most likely going to miss this game. They're going to try to club it up and have him play against Tennessee next week. So that's your starting left guard. He's actually, Chuck, the guy who started the opener at center – didn't go so great, so they moved him to left guard. But he's one of your best five, for sure.
All right, and we've talked about Will Campbell. Throw a bone to Emory Jones, because you're right. I mean, he's in 12-foot waters, but he's kind of, at least, he's at the surface.
Emory, full disclosure, I got to watch Emory play all throughout his high school career. He went to the same school I did, and I called games there for a lot of years. He belongs immediately, man, athletically or physically. You know, you could put him on an island, or you could put him in the phone booth, and he'll drive bodies. He's going to be a really, really special one, man. Remember that name, because you know Campbell and Jones are going to be a really special duo as bookend tackles for LSU for the next 3 years. But like any young player, you put them on the field, like there's going to be growing pains, and I suspect there'll be some tomorrow, Jordan Hare, or
what,
Saturday.
What is the crack? The Auburn fan listening, I was like, well, the LSU offensive line, there might be something there. What's the crack with the LSU defense when Auburn has the ball? Because I have nothing for you. I said Tank looks like Benny Rodriguez to me. I mean, he's playing with all the other kids in the Sandlot, and he's the future Dodger, you know.
right.
What do you got? What's the crack? What's the opening? What's the opportunity?
Well, if you look at the Florida, Florida State game, especially in the first half, a mobile quarterback in Jordan Travis was able to make LSU pay on third and short. Florida State continuously got in third and manageable, and a lot of times plays would break down and he would move the chains with his feet. What I'll tell you is, man, over the past three games, Chuck, Matt House, I know, look, don't misunderstand me, man. I'm not going to do backflips over wins over Southern State and New Mexico, but they are at all three levels of the defense, not only talented, but they're well-coached. I don't know that Auburn has a great path offensively in this game. The one thing that we've yet to see from LSU is what happens defensively is what happens when they go up against elite receiver talent. We're going to see that next week against Tennessee, but we haven't seen these corners challenged against elite receiver talent. And Chuck, I mean, I don't know that Auburn has those horses to make that the battle.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be snarky here. This is what I would say if I was talking about North Carolina or Syracuse's receiver or anybody, Notre Dame's, whoever. They don't have one kid that wins at the line of scrimmage. Not really, not consistently. They don't have – literally, there's not – There's not one SEC 13 receiver on that roster.
Yeah. Chuck, I'll tell you this, man. You talk about the running game. You know, one of the big questions, you know, we talked so much about Mason Smith coming into the season, right? Five-star defensive lineman. He was poised for a huge year. Tore his ACL on a freak thing against Florida State on the first defensive series where he was just jumping up celebrating, tore his ACL. Mekhi Wingo has replaced him. Mekhi Wingo was a freshman All-SEC in Missouri last year. Yep. And Chuck, I interviewed him before the season, and I asked, you know, what's your strength? He said, it's an interior pass rush. It's his ability to be strong, low to the ground, and just blow up the launch pad. And man, I don't know if you remember if you're watching the game against Mississippi State, but Mike Leach went for it four times on fourth and one. And on two of those, Mekhi Wingo blew up the play. I mean, he is a very different skill set than Mason Smith, who's just, you know, a destroyer. But Mekhi Wingo is so good at just creating the car crash pileup at the line of scrimmage that he frees up other dudes to make plays. That's a guy maybe worth watching on Saturday if you're looking to keep an eye on somebody on that LSU defense making an impact.
Last thing for you, what do you think the crowd's going to be like heading over there? Just be LSU fans actually going towards the bad weather.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still Auburn, man. Yeah. Like, it's still LSU Auburn. Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, man, LSU doesn't have a traditional rival. So there is juice in a lot, if it's Auburn, if it's Bama, if it's Florida, like, there's juice in a lot of these games. So for LSU fans, man, the Auburn game, I don't care what Auburn's record is, Chuck, you'd probably agree with this. The worst Auburn team that I've ever seen in my life was 2012, the one that was 0-8, and they fired.
Slug it out, man.
That was 12-10. Yeah. I mean, LSU trailed 10-9 at half, and that was the LSU team that had everybody back from the 11 team.
Matthew, I absolutely agree with you on that, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. We will talk to you as the season rolls along, brother.
All right, Chuck. See you, man.
Matt Moscona. And he's all throughout the state of Louisiana, but also on 104.5 there in Baton Rouge. And so, again, this is 6 o'clock. And it's just interesting, 6 o'clock Saturday. LSU fans, if they leave the Bayou, they're actually going towards the bad weather. So kind of gives them a break this year, but maybe they'll see some in person.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football with the Chuck Oliver Show. Turned 8 last week. Put another candle on the cake. I appreciate everybody making that possible. 9 states, 56 sticks. So, again, thank y'all. Just peel the roof back and pour in blessings. It's awesome. I got to call out our next guest a little bit. If you go to his Twitter page, I believe his family has just tipped off the play call something fierce. I think it's like a 32 bend back trap. You've got a left guard that is clear. He's got a family photo where the left guard are clearly going to block down. And the right guard, who is his son, looks like he's about to get a head start on that trap block going the other way. I mean, you just can't tip off plays like that. Want to welcome on from not just Jocks in Birmingham from the SEC Network. It is Cole Kublik. Cole, you got to coach better technique, man.
Yeah, we're working on it. Both my boys lining up at guard there, and we practiced the 3-point stance. Obviously, my teaching is not caught on just yet, so we'll get out in the backyard this afternoon and work on that a little bit more.
Now, I'm like, clearly that's a down block coming, and the guards are – so, just tipping it off, man. But they're young, so you can still mold them. Let's talk about your game this weekend. I believe you got the Georgia Bulldogs on the road, Como. Tell me – I don't mean to – I mean, every opponent, you respect them, and it's SEC, and it's in conference on the road, so it's always dangerous. All right, I said all that stuff. Missouri is not – does not look – to me, like they're at the point where this game is really about Georgia. This is about Missouri trying to play a lot better. Tell me what you see.
Yeah, there's just they're not playing great football right now, and it's weird. There are a couple of teams in the league that I think we didn't know a ton about. We had a lot of questions about Chuck going into the year and thought, okay, maybe they could exceed expectations. There were pieces of Missouri's team that I looked at and I thought, yeah, I could see where they surprised some folks. Maybe because of the youth, the consistency won't allow them to do that week in, week out. And I think South Carolina would probably be another team that I would describe in the same category as Missouri, of just thought some things would be a little bit better than they are, and it's not working out that way. It starts with Brady Cook, and just not playing consistent football, turning the ball over a little bit too much, and you're obviously not going to be able to have that against high-level competition. I thought the offensive line would play better football. Javon Foster was one of the best tackles in the league last year, and he's just not playing like it, plain and simple. I really don't know another way to describe it. You got a redshirt freshman center that's kind of doing what he can, but not really there just yet. But the weapons, they flash at times. I mean, Dominic Lovett gives you elite skill. Luther Burns, a guy that can help you in a lot of different ways. We've seen it at times, just not consistently. You know, Toskey Dove probably needs more touches in this offense. That's the problem, is when your quarterback's inconsistent and you're not winning first and second down and you're getting trapped in third and longs, you're going to have difficulty spreading the ball around. You're going to have difficulty getting 2, 3, 4 receivers, 6, 8 touches a game. There's not enough plays to go around. So, and then defensively, once again, up front, it's not as bad as it was a year ago, but it's just inconsistent. You get guys that look like they freestyle a little bit, guys that either get displaced or find themselves taking themselves out of their gaps, and fitting the run has not been a strength of this defense just yet, especially quarterback runs, which they've had a very difficult time slowing down. So I just think Missouri's got to find a way to be comfortable enough to play consistent football with whatever that is on offense or defense. They haven't been able to find that just yet.
Cole, I look at numbers, and they can be great indicators. They can show you great ball players, just numbers, like catches. John Metchie, 100 catches, is the number two last year. I'm like, all right, that shows you something. But it's not that. It's not catches or yards. To me, it's getting in the end zone, man. That's what makes you a different ball player. Brock Bowers had 13 touchdowns last year, and this year he's just rolling right along. That's one of the best football players I've ever seen in the SEC, and he's played a season and a month.
Well, and you said it, and I think more people should probably be having that conversation of just, not is he the best tight end in the SEC, the best tight end in college football, where does he stack up just all time? Yeah. Because I think the best way to describe him right now is there's not a matchup. There just isn't, Chuck. It's linebacker, nickel, safety, edge. There is no matchup that you could look at and say, okay, we have an advantage here with Brock Bowers. And then you look at the different places that he's able to line up. Then taking those two jet sweeps last week, he told me that he hit over 21 miles an hour on the GPS on that long run. So how do you stop him? How do you slow him down? And I think the coolest part about him is, when I asked Stetson Bennett earlier this week to describe him, he said reliable, as in I always know where he's going to be. So when those two are in sync on the same page, and that allows you to quickly get the football to him, or confidently get the football to him, and then you can line him up in so many different places, and he can hurt you after the catch. This is not a guy that you have to have 5 or 7 seconds in the pocket to get the ball to. And now Coach Munkin's coming up with different ways, creative ways to feed him the football, and he deserves those touches because he's the most dynamic player on their team, one of the most dynamic players in college football. And I agree with you. Right now, let's just say one of the most unique players that we've seen in the SEC all time. And I think when it's all said and done, we should probably be having that conversation, if he keeps it up, as one of the best football players that we've seen in this league.
Yeah, my top shelf above everything, the category is game wrecker. And I'm talking like Darren McFadden, game wrecker, that sort of Percy Harvin. He's a game wrecker, Brock Bowers is. You had Bama last week, and I want to ask you about one particular play. I swear I was about to text you in the game. I was like, no, man's busy. There was a 4th-and-1, and Vanderbilt chose to run option Will Anderson side with a true freshman quarterback. And I was like, I treat that side of the field like it's covered with lava. but they tried to go option Will Anderson. Did that stand out to you, and did I miss anything? What a dominant – that may be Will Anderson's best performance.
Yeah, almost the almost as confusing as Alabama's fourth down play that they decided to throw a fade to Ken Latu, which with all the different options that they have, I was just kind of like, okay, that was weird. I'm not really sure why that was the direction that you went. The one thing that I'd say about it from a scouting perspective is he has been crashing the mesh very quickly this entire season. So maybe they sat back and said, okay, if he is going to attack our mesh point like that, we should be able to get down the line of scrimmage, quickly pitch the football, have some space, be able to pick up a short yardage situation. But, yeah, I was with you. I would probably try to avoid 31 as much as possible, specifically in short down situations. You know, I talked to Coleman Holzer, his position coach, before the game. And I was just like, man, I feel sorry for these tight ends that they're putting on him. And then I feel sorry for the tight ends that they put on him in practice when I go watch him practice. He annihilates these guys. And I said, I don't think he gets enough credit for how well he plays the run. And Coleman told me, he goes, you know, it's been one of our coaching points this year to actually get him to, like, not be – I don't know what that character's name is in the X-Men that has, like – he looks like Ram Man and He-Man. You remember that dude?
Yes.
He had, like, the giant, like, concrete helmet.
Yeah.
Whatever that dude in X-Men is that has, like, the same gimmick and he, like, runs through the wall.
Juggernaut.
Juggernaut. They're trying not to get him to play like Juggernaut as much. And I'm like, why would you want to coach that out of a guy? Like, just let him annihilate everybody. Let him crack all the face masks on the field and let him keep going. But, you know, they do want him to be a little bit more of a finesse player at times when the situation calls for it. But I don't know why I would ever run the ball towards him in a short yardage situation, because he plays the run much better than anybody gives him credit for.
Yeah, he's that kid that had to always bring his birth certificate when youth league signups, you know. To prove that he was of age. Wrapping up, Cole Kublik, Jocks, of course, which about the Heritage Station you're going to find anywhere in the South talking football, and then also SEC Network. You've had LSU. I believe it was the Southern game, which, again, you know, it's kind of wide open that night. But tell me what you think Auburn's shot is this week based on the matchups. Again, Jaden Daniels is a really, really special ball player, but tell me what you see.
Do not feel great about LSU in the or Auburn in this spot against LSU. I kind of view this LSU team as trending up, growing, kind of gradually finding themselves. And I hear people, Chuck, say, oh, they're so much better than when they played Florida State. They've improved so much. And honestly, I don't really look at it that way. I see this team as one that's just sort of finding themselves. They're figuring things out. They have been tinkering with the lineup, and I believe that that has led to them just understanding who they are a little bit more. You think about the fact that, let's start with the defensive line. You lose Mason Smith after, what, the first series in the first game. B.J. Olajuwon, he gets a targeting. Olajuwon gets dinged up. Ali Gay gets the targeting.
Yep.
So then the next game you come out, there's no Mason Smith. Olajuwon's out for the entire game. He set that one out, and Ali Gay misses the first half because he's suspended. So Matt House got to figure some of that out. Well, now Harold Perkins is coming on at linebacker. How can he help? How can we put him in? Seven Banks gets in, the Ohio State transfer, for the first time last week. Now he's somebody who we can move around, do some different things with. Offensively, you didn't really know exactly what you were going to be up front on that offensive line. So Dellinger goes initially at center. He moves over. Then all of a sudden, John Emery becomes your guy at right tackle. Will Campbell's a true freshman starting at the other tackle. You shuffle that group around a little bit, but now you seem to know what it is. You get John Emery back at tailback, and guess what? You know, he looks like he's your best runner. At least that's what Denbrock and Kelly told us. So now you're more confident there. Got a good group of receivers. You're playing a freshman tight end the majority of the time. So, and then I think the Jaden Daniels aspect of him wanting to run, being comfortable running, and then them sort of building some things around that, I think they're just finding themselves. But I could see this team being one that sort of gradually grows throughout the course of the season. And I'm not saying they win 10 or 11, but being a pretty good football team if they stay healthy by the end of the year, because let's be real, spring practice, fall practice, you don't get as much contact. Some of these games for the first quarter of the season for a ton of teams, not one or two, a lot of teams, Chuck, is becoming extended practice. You don't know what you have until you play. And then you have to adjust from there. And I think that's what Brian Kelly and his staff have done. And this is a bad, bad, bad matchup for Auburn this weekend. I don't like it. I don't see a lot of ways that they can be successful.
Last thing, and it's just a quick comment, because Tennessee's off this week, but you had them already. Tell me, and you watched them since, tell me how you project, how real might this be against the two Godzillas on their schedule, Georgia and Bama?
Well, it's going to be real just because of what they're capable of, and that's the main thing I said. When Josh Heupel got hired, I said they're going to be more capable. They're going to have more opportunities to do things than they've had in quite some time, and mainly that is scoring points. So now you got a team that is going to take their shot. They're going to push the ball down the field. And, I mean, it's kind of where we've gotten to in college football, where an incompletion thrown outside the hash 20 yards or more down the field is almost a plus for the offense now, because you're showing your defense, okay, we've got to play back and out. If we don't, we're in trouble. Well, then the offense can attack the middle of the field. My favorite quote all time, Ben Lear, football ain't hard. That's it. It's that simple. When you watch Tennessee operate, yes, they go fast. Yes, some of it looks really complicated, but a lot of it's the same stuff that they make look confusing, and then they do it quickly, and they push the ball down the field with guys that can go attack it and make you pay for it. So I think the offense is very real. It's always going to be difficult to defend. You're going to need a couple of mistakes from them. Jury's still out on the defense a little bit. I do think the middle of that defense has played better than I thought they would. I didn't really expect Amari Thomas and Elijah Simmons and those guys to sort of be a force to be reckoned with. And they're not overly dominant just yet, but I like the way they move Tyler Barron and Byron Young around, try to get a little bit more twitchy, try to generate a little bit more pass rush. Tim Banks doing a good job right there. So I would still classify Tennessee as dangerous when you're talking about those two teams, Georgia and Alabama, but they got a great chance to get every other game on their schedule.
He will get all his Fitbit steps in this Saturday. It'll be in Como. Cole, appreciate you, brother.
Absolutely, Chuck. Always enjoyed visiting with you.
Cole Kublik, SEC Network, and Jocks. Just fantastic insight there. So you can ask him about more in the offensive line. That's the one thing. I always notice when we have quarterbacks on, I want to ask other questions other than quarterback questions. But I was like, nah, that's kind of the most interesting stuff all the time. But with Cole, you can go anywhere. It's always loved that. All right, we're going to break. Come back. This is hour one, and we will wrap it up next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
If you sit down and studied his film over the first four games, I dare you to find better quarterback play out there. I really do. There have been lulls. With all the other guys, he has been top-notch. He's had, in the first four games of the season, he's a top-five quarterback in the entire country right now.
That's Ryan Leaf. If you're on SiriusXM, did I get that right? Hey, I got that right. There's about a 40% chance Dan was going to look at me and, like, there's this thing where Dan can talk only to me. And he says, no, it's the other network. And I just don't know. Here's part of why I don't know is because I just use the room where I watch TV, college football. All I do is hit the last button because on the cable company I have, my last, like if you're in the hotel room, you hit the last button on the remote, it goes back to Game Show Network or whatever you were watching, like literally the last network. Mine brings up a list of like the last 10. And so I just recognize it says, well, there's a North Carolina and a Virginia Tech helmet, and so that's the – all right, I want that game. So I don't know what networks people work for, but that was Ryan Leaf. And he is talking about Michael Penix and the University of Washington and Kalen DeBoer, head coach there. And he said, Michael Penix is top five. Nobody's playing better. Blah, 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 and every word of it's true. Whoa, wait a minute. What do you mean blah, blah, and then you say it's true? No, I'm saying Ryan Leaf, he could have kept going, man. If it were positive things about Washington's offense and passing game and Michael Penix, it turns into blah, blah, blah. Johnny Manziel, did you see him Saturday against Mississippi State? Oh, my gosh, he did this and this and this and blah, blah, blah. That's what Michael Penix is. He's at that level right now where it's just, oh, my gosh, did you see it? And you probably haven't. See, that's part of it. They played Kent State, Portland State, Michigan State, and Stanford. So they're already in conference against an okay enough opponent, I guess. And they played a decent enough Michigan State team. By the way, Michigan State's 2-2, and they really haven't gotten to the tough part of their schedule. And they – it's a $95 million contract. So that's the schedule. So those four games and ahead of – they play tomorrow night, don't they? Yeah, they play you. This will be a fun game. Everybody listening, what are you doing tomorrow night? Washington's on the road. They're playing UCLA. Brother, that's fun. Now, it's Friday night in the South, and so high school football, sure, love it. Best part about high school football game that I like, if I'm just there and I'm not really attached to one of the teams, that part in the fourth quarter where they announce all the hot dogs and hamburgers are now a dollar. Dan's like, Dan just, oh, track shoes. There's nothing about a right, correctly grilled burger at a high school football stadium. So that's tomorrow night. But if you aren't at a game, UW and UCLA, can I tell you? And so I said, if you haven't watched, and you haven't, and it's fine, but you have a chance to watch tomorrow night if you're not actually out somewhere. If you haven't watched, I'm going to tell you how Washington is now leading the nation in passing yards. And it's basically all Michael Penix. They've had the backup in a couple of games in the blowouts. But here is Washington, if you haven't watched, and I know you hadn't, and it's fine. Here's how Washington has approached offense this year. Throw the ball more than anyone else and never give up any sacks. Now, that's really what Michael Penix and the Washington Huskies offense is doing. They have more passing yards than any other team in college football. And they have yet to allow a sack with Michael Penix in the game. They've given up two sacks. It was when the backup was in with the second-team offensive line. Michael Penix, more passing yards than anybody else, hadn't been sacked. Works for me. Oh, now you got to go out and execute it. So it'll be fun, so watch it. What's up, Dan?
You know, and the other part of, too, you were talking about with the burgers and dogs and everything, you got the Dad's Club over there on the grill. They're over there working it, the games. And I'll say this, the one thing that I miss the most about Texas this time of the year is especially in Central Texas. Some of those high school games, the things you're getting, let's go. Like a buddy of mine still does games. He posted on Instagram the other day, brisket nachos at a game.
Oh, I don't doubt it at all. You don't do this anymore because at first it was Garmin and TomTom and all that. Now it's just your phone. It's free. It's Waze.
Right.
But my first year of actually on a staff was 1992, and I was the B-team coach who on Friday nights would go scout the next week's opponent.
Yeah.
And it would be, hey, Chuck, you know where this small town in Alabama is or this small town in Georgia, small town in Florida, you know, whatever it was. I was like, yeah, all right, drive to that town, look for the lights. That was GPS in 1992 was drive to the town, look for the lights.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then Smithson Valley High School, shout out to them. The sausage wraps they used to have. That's where Eric Anders, former Alabama National Championship linebacker turned UFC fighter, played his ball there in the San Antonio area. Are we probably going to agree that there might have been some Clemson fans last week that were at least a part of them in the game rooting for them to lose, so then immediately they could pounce on DJ Uiagalelei and say, see, he's the reason. He's holding us back. We're not that good because of him, despite the fact that basically your entire secondary was out for this game. And also, too, let's not gloss over the fact that he threw 5 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. He's only thrown 1 pick this entire season against Furman. So it's one of those things that I think once we get something in our minds, we don't want to come off of it. And then once it's there in our minds, we look for the first opportunity to be able to pounce and say, see, I've been telling you guys all along, I'm right. It needs to be that Klubnik guy. But let's be honest here. They won that game last week because of DJ Uiagalelei, not in spite of him. They went out there and they were able to put together some huge drives in that fourth quarter where it looked like it was going to get away from them and that it was going to be a good day for Wake Forest and not for Clemson. And that in large part was due to DJ Uiagalelei. I'm telling you right now, Dabo Swinney, he put his chips on this guy. He is riding with this guy. And so far, it's paying off pretty well for him. And like I said, I think they're winning games because of him, not in spite of him.
And this weekend, there's a real reason to watch him, man. NC State and Clemson, gimme, gimme, gimme. It's not just Kentucky and Ole Miss, man. We get rewarded. It's October, and we got great games on the schedule.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.